Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 15 lines from the top. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side in the margin where you'll notice the nosei we've written in, the topic heading. And it reads as follows: Chotaf mi shochefetz shela, man grabbed an item belonging to a woman, v'hodar kidesh oisa bo, and then he proposed marriage to her with it. Haim hi mikudeshes, is she thereby considered married? The Gemara. Hahi itza, there was a woman, da'aveka mezavna varshechi. She was selling varshechi. On the side of the Gemara, you'll notice in the starred note, there are four different explanations for what varshechi is. We can choose number two is margolios, would be pearls, or number three, a mitznefes shenoisim al habadach, some type of headband, or whatever. There are other pshotim. Nevertheless, she was selling this item. We'll refer to it as varshechi. Also, hahu gavra, chotaf varshecha mina. A man came along and grabbed from her a varshecha. Omra le hava nihali, and she's demanded it in return. Give it back to me. Omar lo, the man said, iyahivna lech miktishesli, if I give it to you, will you marry me? Shaklisei vishtika. She took it and remained silent. V'yomer Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman said, Yechola lemeimar in shakli v'didi shakli. She can say, yeah, I took it, I took back my own thing. The point of Kesef Kiddushin is that a man gives something of his to her. Not that he gives her her own thing. And yet, Rava raises a question. Eisvei Rava l'Rav Nachman. Kitsha begezel uvechomas ubegneva. A man tried to marry a woman, offering her these are different types of theft: gezel, chomas, and gneva, items that are stolen. Oh, shechotap sela miyodo v'kitcha, or he grabbed from her a coin, a sela coin, and gave it to her and married her with that. Mikudeshes, she is considered married. So, is that not a source that runs against Rav Nachman's teaching? The Gemara answers, Hosam b'deshodich. In that case where she is married, after he had stolen the coin from her, he started discussing marriage with her. Or Rashi says, b'deshodich shediber bo kodem lochein. He had spoken with her before he gave it to her, v'nisratzis l'shkashlo, and she agreed to marry him. Dalsam kishoska, there where she remained silent, mishum denicha lohu. That's because she is approving of what is taking place. So the Gemara now asks, umina temra dishoni lon ben shodich udalo shodich. Where do we have a source from which we can discover or reveal that that makes a difference, that the discussion prior to his giving it to her will make all of the difference? The Gemara answers, but take note of the fact it's a long answer. It means we need to go through all of this material in order to see the point. Desanya, Omar lo, kinsi selazu shani chayev lichi. A man says to a woman, take this coin that I am obligated, that I owe you. V'chozar v'omar lo hiskachi libo. And then he says to her, be married to me with it. So it depends. Bishas matan mois. If it's at the time that the coin is being given to her, that he is giving her the coin, rotsasa mekudeshes, lo rotsasa eino mekudeshes. We can't define the words rotsasa and lo rotsasa yet. The Gemara, right after the source, will deal with those expressions. But a distinction is made between rotsasa versus lo rotsasa. La'achar matan mos, if after she already received the money, he says, Hiskachili, be married to me, afilu rotsasa, eino mekudeshes. Even if you have the rotsasa situation, it still does not work. Well, my rotsasa, my lo rotsasa. And we go through a couple stages of analysis. You can see we've dashed underlined e lemo, and then a couple lines later, elo. So, e lemo, rotsasa diomra in, lo rotsasa diomra lo. The rotsasa simply means she said yes. And lo rotsasa, she said, she articulated no. Ha ishtika, however, had she remained silent, havu kiddushin. But silence would have been acceptance of the marriage. Well, if that's the pshat, if that's the explanation, then v'nisni mikudeshes stam kihosam. Why not teach in the source, instead of the two phrases, rotsasa versus lo rotsasa, just say that she is mikudeshes. In other words, the source would have read in the resha, the Omar law hiskachi li, so bishas matan mos mikudeshes. And the suggestion of writing just the word mikudeshes is based on the precedent from above. Notice we have a little star to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text. You align this with the star above, and there you see the word mikudeshes without any distinctions between rotsasa versus lo rotsasa. So it would have been sufficient just to write mikudeshes. And Rashi adds, if silence would have been a kiddushin, would have resulted in actual kiddushin, there's no need to say lo rotsasa, she's not mikudeshes. That's obvious. Ela rotsasa di omra in lo rotsasa di ishtika. The case of lo rotsasa, in fact, is her remaining silent. The kotani de eino mikudeshes, and the source says that she is not married. In other words, her silence is, as we said before, that she's not approving of the marriage. She's simply saying that she's simply indicating that that which she received is hers. We take a look at the Rashi. You'll find the Rashi a little more than halfway down. Lo rotsasa di ishtika. Lo rotsasa means she remained silent, v'kabilse, and accepted the item given to her. V'afilu hochi eino mekudeshes. And even so, she's not married. Di da shakla. She was simply taking her own item. Ula'achar matan mois, if after she was given the item, afilu rotsasa damra'in, if she then said, yes, lo mikdisha, the mikora kabilse b'choiva, because when she did accept it, at the point she accepted it, she was simply accepting that which was owed to her. V'chihada amra'in lo koyovla midi, and when she later on said, yes, at that point he wasn't giving her anything. We continue with the Gemara. Why is it that if she remains silent, does the source say she's not mikudeshes? My taima, yecholo lemeimar, because she can say in shakli, yes, I took it, but v'didi shakli, what I took was my own. Ah, v'yelo kashyohach. Well, what are we going to do in light of the following source that we had read earlier? The kitsha begezel uvechomus ubegneva o shachotav selam yada vikitsha mekudeshes. If he tries to marry her with a stolen item, or he grabbed something from her and then gave it to her, she is married. Elo lav shmami. No, we have to conclude that in order to resolve the two sources, ha de shadich ha de lo shadich. This source that we just cited that says she is married is because shadich. There was prior discussion about their getting married. In the source where we saw her remaining silent and she's not married, it's because there was no prior discussion concerning their getting married. On the side of the Gemara, you'll notice we have a structural note, Mivne. Diamonds will appear, and they indicate Rabbonon Shiyoshvu Leesof Halochas Rav Asi Achrei Pitarso. After Rav Asi's passing, the rabbis assembled in order to collect halachas that were taught in the name of Rav Asi. The volcano shape will be highlighting Rav Asi's name. The series of halachas, you can see we've numbered alongside the Gemara text 1 through 3, the third diamond appearing at the top of Omid Beis. And under the Nosei, the topic heading, we indicate that number 1, Ein Karka Niknes Bepochos Mishove Pruta. Land is not acquired with a payment of less than a Shove Pruta. Elim Kein Kinyin Bechalipin, unless the Chalipin method of Kinyin is used. The Chalipin method is a type of representative Kinyin, a representative transaction, symbolic transaction, if you will, where the buyer takes something of his own, and here we're going to indicate, even if it's less worth less than a Shove Pruta, and gives it to the owner of the land. Upon the owner of the land's taking of this insignificant item, the land is transferred to the buyer. Under those circumstances, if you're going to employ a Kinyan Chalipin, that symbolic type gesture, then the item need not be worth even a Shove Pruta. But if the purchase is as a money payment, you won't be able to effect the purchase unless a minimum of a Pruta is given. That's as far as point number one. Point number two relates to Dayonim She'enom Yoidim Betiv Gittin V'Kiddushin, where Rav Asi had taught that judges that are not expert in the laws of Gittin, of divorce and Kiddushin and marriage, and nevertheless issue rulings, Koshin Le'olam Yoser Midor Mabel, they present a problem, a difficulty to the world more than the generation of the great flood. And number three, which appears on Omid Beis, Ha'isha Shavio Chatos Umesa, a woman who had given birth and is obligated to bring two sacrifices, a Chatos and an Oila, and she brought while she was alive the sin offering and then died. Ma din yorshel b'inyan havuasei losa? What is the law with regard to her heirs and their providing the korban ola, the ola sacrifice? Now the Gemara. Ki noch nafshe de Rav Asi, when Rav Asi passed away, ailu rabbonin linkutinu lishmaitse, the rabbonin gathered together that to assemble to gather his teachings. Omar leahu mirabbonin, Rav Yankiv Shmei, one of the scholars, and his name is Rav Yankiv, said, Hochi Om Rav Asi, Om Rav Moni. Rav Asi quoted Rav Moni saying, Kishem Shein Isha Niknes Bepochas Mishav Pruta, just like marriage cannot be established with less than a pruta worth of value given to the woman, Kach Ein Karka Niknes Bepochas Mishav Pruta, so too land cannot be acquired by paying less than a Shav Pruta. Omrulei, Vahatanya, the others said to him, but does it not say in the following source, Afa Pishain Isha Niknes Bepochas Mishav Pruta, even though a woman is not married with less than a Shav Pruta, Karka Niknes Bepochas Mishav Pruta, land in fact is transacted with less than a Shav Pruta? Omarlei, Sir Rav Yankiv, responded and said, Kitanyo Hahi Bechalipin, the source that indicates transfer of land through less than a Shove Pruta is when you're dealing with Chalipin. Desanya Kinin Bikli Afalpi She'en Bo Shove Pruta. A vessel can be used for the Chalipin type transaction that we described earlier, the symbolic gesture, even if the vessel is worth less than a Shove Pruta. But as we said, that's if you're going to imply the symbolic Kinyan method of acquisition. However, if you're going to resort to a money payment for the land, you'd have to provide at least the minimum denomination of currency, the pruta, or, of course, something of a value that is not less than a pruta. Hodar Yasvi Vekoamri, they continued sitting and said, Hod Yomer Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that which Rav Yehuda teaches in the name of Shmuel, Kol She'enu Yodea Betiv Gitin Vekidushin Lo Yehei Lo Esek Imohen, anyone who is not expert in the nature of divorce and marriage laws, have no dealings with them, don't allow them to serve as judges on these matters. Omar Ravasi, Om Rabbi Yochanan and Ravasi, and this is why we're citing this point, because Ravasi comments on that, the Kushin Le'olam Yosem Midor HaMabul. Judges who officiate that are not expert in these areas, and yet adjudicate regarding matters of divorce and marriage, are more injurious, more threatening to the world than the generation of the flood. Shene'emar, the Pasuk says, and here we're quoting from Hoshea Perek Dalet Pasuk Beis. It's worth noting that Pasuk Aleph appears on the side of our Gemara. We've written it in the margin. And let's read what we've written. Shimu Dvar Hashem, B'nei Yisrael Ki Riv Lashem, Im Yesh Ve'aretz, Ki Ein Emes Ve'ein Chesed Ve'ein Das Elikim Boretz. The prophet is announcing that there is a stream between the Almighty and the inhabitants of the land. There is no truth, no kindness, and no awareness of God's will. And the Pasuk goes on to say, and now we read from our Gemara text, Shenemar, Aloi v'chachesh v'rotzoch v'gono v'no'ov parotzu v'domim v'domim no'go'u. My mashma, what do we see in these words, in this Pasuk, that indicates the statement of Rav Asi that kosh lo'i l'myosh midor amabol? The Gemara answers, Kidamitagem Rav Yosef. In order to understand this Pasuk, we have to rely on the explanation given by Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, Rashi points out, was an expert in the Aramaic interpretation of the prophets that were taught by Yoinasan ben Uziel. And with his explanation, we'll discover that the end of the Pasuk that spoke about Parotsu, Domim, Bedomim, Nagou, is a reference to matters concerning married women. Now the Gemara. So we asked, how do we see in this citation from Hoshea, Perek Dalet Pasuk Beis, the teaching of Rav Asi? Kinemetagem Rav Yosef. Moldin bonin minashe chavrehon, choven al choven mosifin. The prophet is describing children born from women married to other men. So that women outside of their married life are becoming pregnant, and that results in sin upon sin being added. Uksiv, and it says there in Perek Dalet of Hoshea the following: Al kain te'eval horatz v'umlal kol yoshev bo b'chayes asod b'foshemaim v'gam digei hayom yei o seifu. The sinfulness that we just described regarding married women being impregnated by men other than their husbands results in the world suffering and mourning, and the mourning affects not only the inhabitants of the world but even the animals of the land, birds of the sea, and emphasis placed here, we dashed underline it, the fish at sea. V'ilu b'dor ha'mabul, when you study the topic of the great flood in the time of Noah, lo nigzira gezera al dogim shebiyam, the Almighty did not apply his punishment, his retribution, to the fish at sea. Shenemar, the Pasuk says regarding the great flood, mikol asher becherovo mesu, all that was on dry land, humanity, land animals, they all died. V'lo dogim shebiyam, but not the fish at sea. V'ilu hocha, afilu dogim shebiyam. But here, when it comes to matters of harayas, of forbidden relations, judges that involve themselves in rule while not being expert and their fallacious rulings could result in allowing married, still married women to be with other men, they affect their misguided judgments will end up with punishment wrought upon even the fish at sea. The Gemara has a couple of questions in trying to clarify what we just said vis-a-vis understanding the pasuk, the Amor ad David likulhu. The pasuk we read described a number of sins. We were focusing at the end of the pasuk that you see on the first wide line. There it said porotsu vidomim bedomim nago. And we explained, based on what we saw Rav Yosef explain and what Rashi clarified, that that's a reference to the sinfulness of Eshes Ish, of married women with other men. But maybe the punishment cited in the Pasuk that includes the fish at sea is a punishment that will be experienced only if all the offenses listed in the Pasuk would be violated. That's the question of the Gemara. So how can Rav Asi be so certain that misguided judges alone, with regard to the sin of Eshes Ish, be responsible for this catastrophic punishment, when maybe it is going to be suffered only with the violation of the entire list of sins, including, you could see, again, on the first wide line of the Gemara, Olo v'chachish v'rotzach, that has to do with false oaths, with murder, theft, immorality. So the Gemara says, Lo salka deitach. One should not arrive at that conclusion, that the retribution cited in the posuk that we read on the second wide line, Al-Kain Tabel, that section which we referred to the punishment, is in fact not only if all the sins were violated. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Ki mipnei ola of la haaretz. This pasuk refers to false oaths, because of false oaths, that alone is sufficient in bringing avel, a mournfulness, to the world. And the pasuk on the second wide line spoke about Alkein Teval Horetz, the same word, Ovel, Avelus, the mournfulness visited upon the world. So you see from here that one sin is enough. The Gemara asks, but still that's not convincing. V'hema Olo L'chud, V'hanach L'chudeo. Maybe Olo stands on its own. That, true, on its own could bring catastrophe to the entire world, but with regard to the other sins mentioned, they would have to be done all together, all of them violated, in order to result in the catastrophe cited. Again, a question on what Rav Asi had cited. The Gemara at the top of Omid Bey says, Miksiv uforatsu, in the pasuk that we saw on the first wide line, of the widest of the lines on Omid Aleph, where the sins were listed. It didn't say the porotsu, the domen bedomen nogo section of the pasuk was not introduced with a vav, u forotsu. That vav would have connected it, creating a list of sins whereby the sinfulness of Eshes Ish would not have stood on its own. But the vav is not present, so that you see, as the Gemara says, porotsu ksiv. The word porotsu is without a preceding vav to it, so that we can conclude that because of the sinfulness of married women being impregnated by other men, and that could result from misguided judgment of unqualified judges issuing rulings leading to that situation, that is sufficient for bringing upon the punishment of Al-Kain Teval. The world will suffer, including the fish at sea, indicating what Rav Asi said before, that allowing misguided judges to serve and to rule is a greater calamity than the generation of the great flood. The Gemara continues, number 3, Hodur Yasvi Vekwamri, Hodisnan, Hoisha Shevio Chatoso Mesa, Yavu Yorshim Elosa. A woman who gave birth. The Torah says, requires a woman who gives birth to bring two sacrifices. One is an ola and one is a chatas. This source describes a woman who brought her chatas offering and then died. Her heirs are to bring the ola offering. Rav Asi's name will appear a couple lines later, and hence this is why this discussion is introduced. The first opinion on this matter is Amar of Yudah Mar Shmuel, V'hu Shifrishasa Mechayim. The heirs will bring the Ola offering, provided she designated it while she was still alive. However, if she did not designate it while she was still alive, the fact that she dies leaving, let's say, properties, that's not sufficient reason for the heirs to be obligated to bring her that which she was required to bring. We look at Rashi on the third line from the top. One revelation here is that even though she is no longer alive, the woman is no longer alive, the offering is nevertheless offered. However, if she did not designate, separate the animal, the sacrifice while in her lifetime, so the Tana is not telling us, according to Shmuel, is not telling us that the heirs are obligated nevertheless to bring it. Shalom nischaidu anechosim. Now we've dashed underline that line in Rashi. That's a very significant point, and it represents one of two sides, or one of two opinions, namely that her properties are not bound to provide her sacrifice. We continue in the Gemara. Aval lo hifrishiso michayim, if she had not separated it and designated as an ola sacrifice while she was alive, lo, then the yorshim would not bring it. Alma kosovar, this shows us that he is of the opinion, shibuda lav doraisa. The concept of shibud, basically shibud could be associated with the term lien on one's properties, or that one's properties are obligated to cover one's debts, is not a Torah-based phenomenon. Now, we look at Rashi here on the fourth narrow line, lav doraisi, lomar. It's not from the Torah to say d'chsoy dinish arvin bay that a person's properties are his orev, his guarantor umishtabdin midin orev, and become bound as a guarantor is bound. View milval peh milva shtar shovin. If we were to say that, then the result would be that an oral loan, in other words, an undocumented loan that was extended, and a documented loan would be treated the same. We're not saying that. Ela milva bishtar shushibdo, a written document where someone borrows money and he writes out, he binds his property. The kosav lei, he writes to the lender, nichsei achrein loch, my properties are responsible to you. Ah, mishtabdi, when he proactively bound his properties, so they become bound. Milval peh, where it was simply an oral loan, lacking this writing, this written declaration of binding of properties, lo mishtabdi, so his properties do not become bound, because the whole loan was of an oral nature. In other words, there was no accounting for it in a document. So the concept of shibud is not Torah based, or it doesn't have Torah strength to it. If it did, and we'll see this opinion very shortly, then once the woman bore a child, so she is obligated, and she, along with her properties are bound to enable her to fulfill her obligations. So from her properties, an ola would have to be provided. Yet we see here, according to Shmuel, that if she had not set aside the ola while alive, then her properties are not expected to come up with it. In halachic terms, that is called shibud lav doraisa. Omar Rav Asi, Omar Rav Yochanan, af al gav shel efrisha mechayim. And you can see Rav Asi quoting Rav Yochanan says, even if she didn't set aside the ola while alive, it is to be brought. The heirs will bring it. Alma Kosovar. So you can see that he's of the opinion, shibuda have doraisa. Let us look at the Rashi across from here. Viravasi, Omar, Vaha Nami, this too, Linkutinu, Lishmaitse Amru Hasam. This is cited here as part of the list of things that were the gathering of Ravasi's teachings. The Gemara now raises a question. You can see we've marked it as a long question. We have already heard Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, the names that we had dashed underlined above, to have argued on this topic once already. And as you see throughout the Shas, if an argument is stated once, what's the necessity of presenting it a second time, albeit in a different form, but it's basically the same principle. And the Gemara, after raising the question, will answer that in fact I need both times the controversy appears to be taught. The Gemara continues. De Rav Ushmuel, De Amri Travayu, Milva Alpe Eino Goive Mina Yorshim Velo Mina Lekuchos. We're going to focus on the names that we mentioned earlier. Shmuel is of the opinion that an oral loan, a loan that was extended from the lender to the borrower without it being recorded in a document, when payment time comes, assuming that the borrower himself did not pay up, the malve, the lender, cannot seek payment from the heirs nor from subsequent purchasers, people who purchased property from the borrower after the loan had been extended. What does that show us? The fact that the heirs are not obligated to make good on it means that the properties are not bound. That would be shibuda lav doraisa. And Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, Dami Chavai, Rabbi Yochanan, again emphasizing him along with Reish Lakish, they both say, Milva alpe, goive, bein mina yorshim, bein mina lekuchos. The oral loan, a loan was extended. A man loaned money. Someone borrowed money. When that man borrowed the money, so he's obligated to make good on it, but not only he, but his property is the guarantor, so to speak, for him to make good on the loan. And being that his property is bound to make good on it, the heirs, well, they have to pay it up. People who bought that property after the loan was extended, once again, they bought property that was bound to pay up the loan. So the purchasers will have to part with the property in favor of the lender. In simple words, that reflects the opinion that shibuda doraisa, that the concept of properties being the guarantor or an individual having a lien on the other party's properties is doraisa. It's Torah-based, where it has the strength of that which is in the Torah. The question that we are asking is, why do we need to have the machlokes Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan concerning the topic of shibuda doraisa or not taught twice? We had it in the case of the woman who had given birth and her the question of her ola offering being brought after her death, and the case of the oral loan. The Gemara continues. Tzricha, note we have a long point marking where the Gemara is answering that I need to be taught this idea in both cases. The Itmar Baha, had we taught only the case of the oral loan, Bahach Ko'omar Shmuel, there Shmuel would say that the lender cannot seek payment from the purchasers nor the heirs. Mishum Delo Milve Ksuva Batorahi. It's not a debt that the Torah requires you to pay. Now, that might sound a little vague, but we're going to contrast that in us right now. Avol, korbanos, sacrifices. A woman gives birth. As soon as she gives birth, the Torah imposes the debt of bringing sacrifices upon her. That obligation is found in the scriptures itself. So Amar, I would have thought, Moida Lehu, the Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, there Shmuel would concede to Rabbi Yochanan's point of view that even after her death, even if she had not set aside the korban, it has to be brought. Because it's a milve haksuva batorah. It's a type of debt, an obligation that is written in the Torah. V'yashmin and baha. And had we taught the machlokis in the realm of the sacrifices, baha koma Rabbi Yochanan. Here Rabbi Yochanan is insistent on the heirs, even if she had not set aside the korban to bring it. The milve haksuva batorah kiksuva b'shtar damya. That which is recorded in the Torah as an obligation upon an individual is no less than that which is written out in a document where a person binds his properties. Avol, behach, in the case of a milva al peh, an oral loan, ema moda le l'shmuel. There I would have thought that Rabbi Yochanan would concede to Shmuel. Tzricha, therefore we have to tell that there too the machlokis continues. Rabbi Yochanan does not concede to Shmuel. Omar Rav Popa, Hilchasa Milva al Peh, Goive Min Hayorshim, Vieno Gove Min Alukuchos. And here we have a very interesting split. Up till now, we've seen Yorshim and Alukuchos taught together. Here, they're split. That a Milva al Peh, he rules, is supposed to be paid up by the heirs, but people who bought property subsequent to the oral loan are not obligated to part with what they purchased. To the lender. And now the explanation. Goyvim min hayorshim, shibud hadoraisa. The heirs do have to pay the oral loan because the concept of one's properties being bound to pay off one's debts is a Torah sanctioned idea, is a Torah based idea, has the strength of the Torah, and therefore heirs have to pay up their father's debts even if it was not written out in a document. V'yeno govim min alukuchos. Here we have a, we'll say, rabbinic intervention, where they prevent the lender from seizing properties of purchasers because the purchasers were not aware. The less they call it means there was no publicity concerning the debt that the seller of those properties had upon him to pay up a lender. And because there was no publicity, the purchasers were not put on notice. They were not aware, and they couldn't be expected to be aware. And hence, we cannot charge them, collect from them, when they purchased in a state of innocence. They were not said to be, we'll say, taking a risk per se. Not so in the case of a milva bishtar, someone who buys property in a recorded loan. They know that the property is bound to pay up the debt. Why are you buying it? You're taking a risk. And if the lender one day comes to you after you bought properties from someone who borrowed money in a shtar, so then you deserve to suffer the loss. We continue with laws cited in the Mishnah regarding the woman who acquires her independence through a divorce document and through the death of the husband. On the side of the Gemara, we have an Osei, a topic heading, which in fact reflects what we just said. The Nosei is Ho'isha Kynes Atzmo Beget Uvamisas Abal. Now the Gemara. V'kyne es Atzmo Beget Uvamisas Abal. Bishlomo Get Dichtiv. Get, I understand she gains her independence because the Pasuk is quite clear. It says, V'kosav Lo Sefer Krisus. man writes a divorce document, and it goes on to say, "V'hoiso li'ishacher." Later in the pasuk, it says, and she goes and is able to marry another man. So we see that a woman acquires her independence through a get. Elo misas habal minolan. From where do we know that the death of her husband results in her becoming independent and able to marry anyone she wants? That's the question. I would imagine that to most of you, you probably think, well, it's kind of obvious. You know, if the husband died, so now she's mutter to marry anyone. The Gemara's opening answer would seem to be along those lines. However, if you look ahead in our marked Gemaras, and by the way, if you need to access a marked Gemara, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. You'll notice triangles that appear in alternating directions in a rather rapid or dense fashion. I say rapid because it's almost like line after line you see a change in direction. What is in fact happening is explained on the side under our Mivneh heading. The triangle represents here a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give and take style Gemara. With the point facing up, these are hoichachos shekina es atzmoi sabal. These are attempts to show that in fact she gains her independence through the death of the husband and why and how that works. The inverted triangle, dechios upirchos, they are rejections and challenges and questions to whatever was maintained just before. So if you take note of the Gemara, this discussion continues down to pretty much the end of the Omid, the Gemara. You asked, how do we know that a woman gains her independence through the death of her husband? Savorahu, it's logical. Hu asra, for who shorsa? He was responsible in their initial marriage for becoming forbidden to all others. And now when he's not around, so that shorsa means he allows her through his death. The Gemara says, ah, but we can challenge that logic. Arias, the case of forbidden relations. Let's focus on one example. A man has children, and he married another woman called Eshesav. When that father of children dies, his sons cannot marry the wife. It's not their own mother, but it's a second wife that their father happened to have wedded. So the case of Arias, the Osar Lehu, the father is the one that creates the prohibition. It's their father's wife. Velo Shori Lehu, with his death, she does not become Muteris. The sons cannot marry the woman that was once married to their father. And we're not talking about their mother, as we said. It's a second wife. Nevertheless, she's forbidden. So this Svara of Hu Asra of Hu Sharsa is not accurate. Ella, how do we know that the death of the husband allows the wife to marry someone else? Ella midoma rachmona. The Torah says, Yevoma she'en labonim asura. A woman whose husband died and he left no children, but left a brother. The son-in-law, namely the widow, she's called the Yevoma. If there are no children, she cannot marry any other man. She has to marry the surviving brother. We can infer, ha yesh labonim, if the husband died with leaving children, so then muteris, she is allowed to marry anyone else. So what do we see? We see that upon the death of a husband, assuming that he has children, that's enough to allow her to marry anyone else. The Gemara says, v'dilma, maybe not so. Maybe the analysis is as follows. Ein lo bonim asur li alma v'shar yo liyovam. Woman who's left a widow, husband leaving no children, she can't marry anyone but the yovam. But she's allowed to marry the yovam. V'yesh lo bonim, a woman whose husband died leaving children, l'kulei alma nami asura. She, in fact, is usher to everybody, not just to everyone, but to the yovam also. So still, we don't see that with the death of a husband, a woman is allowed to marry other people. Ella. So we try to answer as follows. Mid'omar rachmona almona l'kain godol asura ha l'kain hedyo sharia. That we know the Torah says regarding the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, he is restricted in whom he can marry. He cannot marry a widow. So the Torah is telling us a widow is forbidden to a Kohen Gadol, we can infer, but to a common Kohen, she would be allowed. So what do we see? The fact she became a widow, her husband died, that allows her, that enables her to marry other people. The Gemara says that's not convincing. V'dilma l'kohen gadol b'lav. Could be that the widow is prohibited by negative command to marry a kohen gadol. L'kulei alma b'asei. But with regard to everyone else, she's forbidden. The violation, though, is categorized as a violation of a positive command. What's the positive command? So it's not straightforward. It's as follows. Rashi explains that we learned earlier in the Torah itself that a woman is allowed to marry another man if she is divorced with a get. The Pasuk says, V'yotzevois lishacher. How? Through a get. And we would then infer a get is the method of allowing her, but not death of husband. That's called a lav habo michlal asei. That's a negative that's derived through the state, the Torah verse that was stated in the positive. The positive was she shall go and marry another man. She has the right to go and marry another man. Inference, but if it's not divorce but it's through death, she's not allowed to marry anyone else. And as we said, that's a negative command, but it's derived, it's inferred from a positive. That has the status of a positive command. You might be wondering, what's the difference between this or that? And they're both forbidden. There are differences between one who violates a negative command that could lead to a penalty of lashing, as opposed to one who violates a positive command. It's prohibited, but it wouldn't lead to a penalty of lashing. Nevertheless, for our purposes, what do we see? We don't have a source yet that the death of a husband enables a woman to marry anyone she wants. The Gemara asks, well, according to your suggestion that to other people there would be an asei, the violation of an asei. Hai asei mai avidite. Rashi, across from here, says, Hai asei mai avidite. What is the nature of this asay that prevents her from marrying other people? And yet, the negative aspect of a married woman, the lav, and the kores that one would have been penalized had he been with her, those are no longer binding. By the Gemara suggesting that the kohen gadol b'lav, and for everyone else, there's an asay, it seems that there was some kind of transformation in her status from when she was still married. Because now, as an almana, she's prohibited to everyone else by virtue or by the strength of a... She's prohibited to the tune of an asay, which is a, relatively speaking, low-level violation. So the Gemara asks, Hai asay mayavid, how did this asay come about? E dahanya misas habal, if the death of the husband was effective in changing her status, tishtri legami, that she should be totally allowed. Idolo ahanya misa sabal, if the death of the husband had no effect on changing her status, tukma b'milsa kamaisa, so she should be in her original state, meaning prohibited as an eshes ish. And Rashi adds, tukma b'milsa kamaisa, if the death of the husband had no effect, so she'd be prohibited. There would be no need for the Torah to write a special lav, a special prohibition for a Kohen Gadol. She's prohibited to everyone. The Gemara says, Alomalo, why not? In other words, the death of the husband, it's not like all or nothing, like you just said, that if it's effective, so she's totally muteris, and if it's not effective, she should remain like she originally was. Why do you say that? We have precedent for a drop in severity as opposed to total allowance. And here the Gemara cites a precedent. Before we go on, Rashi, just a couple lines down, says, Aloma lo, loshon kushya hu. This represents a problem. V'chi lo dover hogun hu came. Can we not, in fact, say what we say? And by the way, by Rashi pointing out Loshon Kushya, It's my feeling that you see the basis of the marking system. In other words, when Rashi tells you something, you have to almost always you have to assume he's telling you something that might have otherwise not been so obvious. So by saying Loshen Kushihu, we have an inverted triangle, and according to the key on the side, you notice we have this as Dechios Upirchos, questions that are raised on whatever was said before, exactly like Rashi says. So the Gemara is asking, why do you say that with the death of the husband, it's either all or nothing as far as a change in her status? Could be something in the middle, like we said, the Asei. How? What's the precedent? Afikto Mimisa, the death of the husband takes her out of being causing a death penalty. Fukimta al asay, and it reduces her. Kimta means it puts her up. It sets her on an asay level of violation. To say that the death of the husband had no effect on her, we're saying that she would still have the status of a married woman, and a person that has relations with a married woman would be misa, death penalty. Here we're saying no, that with the husband's death, afikdami misa, she was removed from the category of capital offense, but she is set upon the level of offense called asay, midi dahave absule hamudoshim. The parallel or the precedent would be the case of sacrifices that were sanctified but became unfit in the course of time. Those are psule, disqualified mukdashim sacrifices. Demeikara, before one would redeem an animal that had been sanctified, even though it's become disqualified, but it hasn't been redeemed yet, ispahu mi'ila, one who derives personal benefit from sacrifices would be in violation of the sin called mi'ila. Mi'ila is the Torah sin for deriving personal benefit from that which has been sanctified. V'asiru b'gizei avodah, and they're forbidden to be, if they're animals that bear that, like sheep that are shorn, giza, vavoda, worked with, you cannot work with them. Parkinu, when you redeem a psula mikdashim, in other words, you set aside money and you say, I want to transfer the sanctity of the animal onto the money. So we have an animal that was once, was originally dedicated, but now redeemed. What is the rule that applies to an animal like that? Mi'ila, lesbu, if you derive personal benefit from it, you're not said to be in violation of Mi'ilah. And by the way, Mi'ilah carries with it a korban obligation. If a person did derive personal benefit from something that carries with it the Mi'ilah punishment, he brings in Asham Mi'ilos, there's a sacrifice that he brings. By redeeming the animal, you're no longer guilty of Mi'ilah. However, Begiz of Avodah Asir, they remain prohibited for shearing and for work purposes. So what do we see? We see that there is an interim level of prohibition. And not to necessarily view changes as being either all or nothing. Ela, so we're still looking for an answer. How do you know Mises Abal is Matir Herli Olam? Midoma Kro, the Pasuk says, regarding a man who very recently married a woman, the Torah tells us that he is exempt from military service. And it says, Pen Yomus B'Milchama, for if he goes to the military front, he might die in battle, V'Shachir Yikochena, and someone else will take her. And the Torah, therefore, has a accommodation for a man that just married a woman, not to subject himself to the perils of military service, which, as we just said, in the military conflagration, he might end up being killed, and the woman will be taken by another man. So what do we see? Death of a husband would have enabled her to be married to someone else. Maskiflo Rav Shisha Breder Avidi. Rav Shisha attempts to question this source by saying, Emo Manacher Yavam. the reference in the pasuk to ish acher yikochena, that doesn't mean she's muter because of the death of the husband to just anybody. It means that the husband might die, leaving no children, and the yavam will take her. The Gemara responds, Ravashi responds, that is no objection. And notice, this is a long marking. Omar Ravashi, shtei tshuvas b'dover, there are two responses to what you just said. Chada, one is the yavam lo ikri achir. The pasuk would not have referred to the yavam as achir. Achir meaning an outsider. The yavam is not an outsider. He's the brother of the deceased husband. V'od ksiv. The pasuk says usneo ish acharon v'kosav lo sefer krisus o kiyomusu ish acharon. You have a pasuk that describes a man divorcing his wife, or a man who dies. So, and we've dashed underlined the key phrases. Sefer Krisus is a get, and Yomus is a reference to death of the husband. V'iskash misa the gerushin. You can see the two are compared to one another. Ma gerushin shaya v'gomeres, just like divorce allows her completely severs the bond and whatever previous status she had as married woman. Af misa shaya v'gomeres, so too death of the husband has the same effect, severs any bond and in a complete way, allowing her to marry anyone she wants, just like after being divorced. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei topic heading, Minolon Diavoma Niknes Babia. From where do we know that the Yavoma is married through intimacy? Of course, this was cited in our Mishnah. Vayavoma, we go back to the Gemara text. Vayavoma niknes b'bia, and it went on to say as well. The kainis atzum b'chalitzu v'misas yavam. She also gains her independence through the shoe removal ceremony and through the death of the yavam. B'bia menalon. How do we know that the yavoma, the widow, is married? Is acquired to the Yavam through intimacy. Omar Kra, the Pasuk says, and we continue at the top of Daf Yud Dalid. Yavoma Yavoi Oleo Ulekocha Lo Leisha. And it goes on to say in the Pasuk, Vyibmo. Rashi at the top says, Yavoma Yavo Oleo Ulekocha Lo, Klomar Biasa, the word Yavo, he comes upon her. Biasa, the intimacy, Hein Likuchel. That is her taking. We had the pasuk in a regular marriage, in a standard marriage, said ki yikach ish isha. The word yikach was associated with establishing a marital bond. So you have that same word root here, ulekocho, so that bia creates likuchin, creates the marital bond. You'll notice we have a house marking, and on the side of the Gemara, the house marking reflects kushios al hamokar shuva kedei lelameid shiavoma niknes bia. We're going to raise questions on this source that was brought to show that this pasuk that was brought to show that yavoma is acquired through intimacy. So the Gemara asks, v'yema lekula milsa kisha. Since the pasuk makes reference to ulekocha lo lisha, maybe the Yavama is to be compared to a regular marriage in all respects. Just like a regular marriage is accomplished through money and shtar, cash or cash value or a document, just like intimacy, so too the Yavama could be acquired through those means as well, just like Bia. After all, the Pasuk says, Le'isha. The Gemara says, Lo, Salka Daitach. No, you can't think that. The Sanya. Here we have a Tanaic source that refutes that suggestion. Could it be that money or a document would create the Yibum marriage just like intimacy with the brother-in-law does thusly? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, V'yibma. The word V'yibma implies intimacy, and we infer Bia Gomeres Ba, and Rashi points out that the concept of intimacy is in this very pasuk repeated twice. It's, we saw Yavo Olel, and then the Yivma. That word, the Yivma, implies, it connotes intimacy. So you have intimacy referred to in the Pasuk twice. The Lashon that you see in Rashi on the third line from the top in the middle of the line, Shinolav HaKosev Li'akev, it's a very common concept that where a Pasuk repeats something, it means that that becomes the binding factor. And hence, we conclude in this source that Bia Gomeres Ba V'en Kesev V'shtar Gomer Ba, that only Bia is effective. That's the only means of creating the Yibum marriage, but Kesev and Shtar do not. The Gemara asks, V'eimo mai V'yidmo, T'val Korcho Mi'abeim. Maybe the word V'yidmo teaches us something else. That a survivor, a widow, is married in the Yibum context, even against her will. Even without her agreement, once the surviving brother wants to marry her, he can do so against her will. In Cain, if that's what the role of V'yidmo was, Le'mo Kro V'yibeim, my V'yidmo. Why did the Torah spell it out, add a hey to it, and write V'yidmo? Shamas Mino Tarti. From this spelling, and this recording of the word V'yidmo, instead of just V'yibeim, I learned both. Bal Korcha, the idea of against her will, plus the exclusion of money and document. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.